Chris, how's Jeremy tracking after the weekend?
Pretty well. It was uncertain as to how we would pull up, obviously, but once he was cleared of what were really precautionary scans, it was just the contact issue that he needed to recover from. The early prognosis is really positive, but the next 48 hours is going to tell us a lot, but we certainly haven't ruled him out. So I think it's likely he'll play, but a bit can change between now and then.
Yeah, and a few others factoring. Mitch Duncan leading the charge on that front. Talk us through the prospects of those guys that have been pushing the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so we think we've got, with the players coming back, and there are 4 to 6 of them, I think. I won't name them because I'll leave a couple out if I try. But when they do get back, which we think is in the next sort of 2 to 3 weeks, if not this week, Mitch will play this week. We think what we've got is a deep list, and our intention this year is to use that. So that will mean we'll use different mechanisms to use those numbers, but it's very reasonable to expect that we won't just play the same 22 every week. And I think we've been pretty consistent with that over a decent period of time, that one, we think our experience is a strength, but it takes a little bit more thought into how we approach the periodisation of our program. So in practice, what that means week to week is that rarely is the 22 that we play a referendum on what we think is the best 22 on our list. There's a bit more longer term planning and thinking that goes into that.
Just on Jeremy, what do you have to say in the next 48 hours? What does he have to do to show you that he's ready to play against the Swans?
Well, he needs to prove it to himself and to our medical and performance staff more than he needs to prove it to me. So my faith is completely with that group, really. I mean, the only instruction that I give over and above their process is that he's not a player that we would take undue risk with, but that probably goes across our whole group. We're just not in that business, so... I guess the message to our fans is if he plays, it's because we're sure that he's right to play, not only right to play, but right to perform really well. If he's a bit off, I think as we've shown in previous years, we'll play the long game and get him right for the next week.
Would you make a decision before you put him on the plane tomorrow?
No, we
fly him to Sydney.
Yeah, but, unless it's a hard no, he'll be on the plane. Yeah. Sorry, Mitch, you were going to say.
That's okay. My question. But just on injuries, Mark O'Connor, is he in the line of play when he needs these match practice from him? Where's the line with Mark?
That's the likely scenario, is that we'll get some match practice into him. We need to work through that a little bit. There's a few balls in the air, but he's part of that big group of players that are right for some match practice. It's hard to differentiate because they are such unique cases, all of them. But Mark had a super pre-season. The unfortunate part of his injury is that it came right around the time when we had some match practice against opposition. So I think we'd probably lean towards getting some match practice into him before we bring him into the team.
Would that be the same with Sam Menegola? Does he need some match practice time for the AFL
side? Oh, yeah, he does. I mean, he had surgery in November. So the initial feedback that I got there was he might not be playing until late May. So he's obviously made a remarkable recovery, and he's just a complete preparer. So, but even it's impossible to prepare yourself in such a way that you can just come back in after no pre-season and play AFL from day one. So we'll just be a bit patient with Sam.
Jed Hughes will be right, Chris.
Jed will be available, yeah. Yeah, he'll play.
Can you just give us an update on Sam Simpson and his concussion scenario? Is this something that's lingered longer than the club anticipated?
Well, I started nodding my head, but no, the answer is I can't really give you clarity on it because I don't understand how even exactly what our forecast was. So I think the best description is when you have things like these, that we have an optimistic view of the recovery, but especially with concussion, it's just so hard to forecast, you know, both ways. That's why, I don't think anyone out there should have too strong a view, especially if you're not intimately involved with the player and seeing him every day. There are some situations that look really bad and the guy comes back and just has no symptoms and recovers really quickly. There are other situations, and I think this fits into Sam's position right at the moment, where it seemed to be okay but just didn't recover as quickly as some others. So the good news is he's back on the track and he's training, but I think the best indication I can give you is that if he has any minor setback, we're going to hold him back even more. So that's where, you know, the concussion protocol can be a bit misleading from the outside. I think, you know, the hard and fast 12-day protocol is set, but it's almost a minimum. You know, if there are any, and when I say symptoms, the mildest of symptoms lead to a really cautious approach, which we completely support. But there's no reason, that sounded probably a little dramatic. Sam's going really well now, but it has taken a while.
Just on Sam DeConing, how disappointing is it that he, you know, puts in a really solid performance until he got hurt last week and now has to pause again? It's been a bit stop-start for him, unfortunately.
Well, this situation's been a bit stop-start, but in the first few years of what we think is going to be a really long career. So I think we'll look back on this one and, a week off didn't do him too much harm. I think in the broader context of the last couple of years, we've got a lot of players, as do other clubs as well, we're not singling ourselves out, that we have a lot of players that were deprived of match practice through the COVID years. And Sam, that's the disappointing part, I guess, to your point. Like, he had a really good pre-season, been deprived of match practice and even sort of proper training within our system through the COVID years, got his chance, played well, and now has to miss a week. But the good news is he's recovered well to this point.
Chris, how do you prepare your team for the prospect of Buddy kicking four? Hopefully he doesn't, for your sake, get to that, but a 15, 20-minute break in the game, do you address it with your players? How do you sort of prepare them for what that might entail?
I just explain what the AFL have explained to us. So we've got a really good heads up already. We know exactly what the situation will be depending on different circumstances, whether it's close to a break or whether it's in the middle of the quarter, you know, whether it's a live play goal or whether it's a set shot. So our players understand what will happen if he kicks that fourth goal, and we understand what our reaction's going to be. But I think, you know, we made the point maybe a little humorously, but we've dealt with a bit of uncertainty over the last 2 years. This is pretty minor in comparison to that. But it's a good news story too. So we don't want to be the we don't want to be the ones complaining about a little bit of difficulty and spoil in the moment. But he's just been a champion of our game, and I don't even know what I think about the crowd going on the field. I haven't thought about it until right now, but I guess I think it's a good thing. Like, just don't slip over.
Leon Cameron admitted last week that they might have got a bit sucked in terms of trying to nullify Buddy's influence and then letting the likes of Luke Parker and Isaac Heaney do what they did. How do you make sure that you're kind of covering your back line across the board and nullifying that entirely?
Yeah, I don't think we'll... We'll certainly prioritise Lance. We owe him that respect. But yeah, Heaney and Parker are super players. It's impossible for them to sneak up on us. It's not impossible for them to play well against us. They're just really good players. But it won't be because they surprised us. And I understand the logic there, that if you focus too much on a gun that others can bob up, it's sort of what we're trying to do at the other end as well. So they present multiple threats, the Swans. They've become a good team. Some really good young players coming in, you know, high draft picks. They're a talented team. It's not just Bud.
Chris, why have you guys played the SCG so well in recent history, bar Andreas Everett sinking you a few years back?
It's a reasonable point. I mean, if we didn't win there last year, there was Jeremy took a mark right on the siren. You'd remember it was a tight game. So depends how you rate these things. I think we've kicked inaccurately there, but we have been on top in games, even though we haven't won them all. We played pretty well at the Gabba through the COVID period as well, which is not as short as the SCG, but it's similar in shape. They're both round, wide wings, short on the way home, which is a little hard to explain given we think we played pretty well here, which is the opposite, long and narrow. So we have some thoughts around why we've been okay there. It was almost, I think back in 2020, it was almost the first game of our long stretch of 4 months away from Victoria. And I think more than anything, I'd point to the fact that we've got experienced players who, you know, have played the ground a lot. It's not as if we're young and we've got guys who've only played there once or twice. Those guys know the ground, and we think our senior players in particular have shown good adaptability when it comes to different venues and the things that they require.
With Jedviews coming back in, is it fair to say you'll have, I guess, a smaller height-wise back line this week, and will that mean, you know, how confident are you can adapt to those guys playing a little bit taller perhaps than they were last week?
We weren't, even a month out, we weren't locked into any particular defensive group. We were optimistic that Tekonen could play his way in, but he had to play his way in. We weren't going to play him no matter what. And then with him being forced out this week, we don't have another 202-centimetre fullback to bring in. So you're right, we'll likely be smaller, but there's a few things that go into it, Josh. We've got to have a think about the weather as well. It's forecast to be a lot of rain in Sydney this week, as there has been over the last month or so. And they play a tall forward line too, which may not happen if it's really wet. So there's a bit to think about. They're good points you make, but I think the logical response would be 202-centimetre guy goes out and Buse is available. Yeah, there's a big swing in height, so we'll need to adapt the way we play a little bit.
And at the other end, obviously, if Jeremy doesn't make it up, are you expecting... You won't be replaced by another tall. You'll go in with, I guess, Asada and Tom Morgans. It's probably two main talls spending time forward.
Probably, but again, look, reference the previous answer, conditions, but a whole range of things we don't have. I don't think anyone's got light for Jeremy Cameron, so we'll be a different sort of player. But, we need to think through that a little bit more.
And just to confirm before, Mitch Duncan is going to play this weekend.
Did I say that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. No, he is, yeah. Yeah, I slipped up. I said yes. Yeah.
Just on your contract, Steve spoke about a pre-game before the Essendon game, sort of the membership component that's going to be thrown into the new contract. Can you just extrapolate on sort of how that sits with you, and do you need to be sort of more communicating more with members? Is that part of, I guess, the new contracts and that you'll be sort of required to divide into?
I think you're the one that's extrapolated on that, Mitch. No, it doesn't mean that at all. Steve is free as a CEO to speak about anything he likes, but I'm not going to speak about the detail of my contract. The only thing I've said publicly is it's done. It was done some time ago. And for me, when the key people look each other in the eye and shake hands, it's done. There might be some details that I don't get involved with that need to be worked through, but no.
No, the only thing he referenced in membership, so that's the only reason we ask. So.
Yeah. But... Yeah, the specific answer to your question is no, there's nothing further that they've asked from me.
Yeah. Just the COVID side of things. We see another player this morning, Adam Chera at Carlton's been ruled out with COVID.
Okay.
I guess we've got to ask weekly now, have you guys all clear? Are you all good for now?
Not exactly sure. Well, I'm getting a nod, so, and as far as I know, we are. But I'm not sure exactly what how clubs are communicating that. What I am pretty sure of, Lloyd, is that it shouldn't be me sort of guessing at a press conference. If we've got information to release, it'll come from people who are more across it than I am. But yeah, you're right, everyone's just going to have to be really adaptable and ready for those things. But again, the last 2 years has been pretty good practice.
Sigler and Myers to play VFL, Chris?
Very likely. Yep. Yeah, we just need to have a look at today, Kingy, but yeah, it's very likely.
Cooper Stevens, progress... How close was he last week? Ben Emergency tells me he's very close, but he's close and there's very close. I'm guessing very close is probably...
Yeah, in the squad's very close. Yeah. But how long do you want to do this year where you look at the local Geelong boys who are in the squad and you ask every week and they don't quite get up, and then you say, what's going on with Cooper Stevens?
We'll still be doing this in September.
Okay. Cooper's going well. Like we took three Falcons were drafted last year. And we took them all. We have a bias towards the Geelong boys and we're really optimistic about all of them. Toby Conway has had a little bit of a hip issue that's held him up, but he was going so well in the pre-season that we could see him playing AFL footy this year. So maybe we'll make it a regular segment. Right? The local boys, where are they? I'm happy. I actually am happy to give you a running commentary on them because I understand the interest in it. My only concern is that when we keep talking about them, it puts pressure on them. You know, the implication is there's some reason why they're not in the team, and that's generally not true. It's just that they're a little bit in their development behind the guys who are cracking it for a senior game, but they're progressing well. It's all positive.
Stephen is probably more the interesting one because he's third year on the list as opposed to White and Conway being obviously only draftees.
Yeah, yeah. No, I take your point. Cooper's, we drafted him off virtually no top age year. He was injured. Then he had the COVID year when we were up on the Gold Coast with virtually no games, got injured again, and then he was injured for a fair bit through last year, which was COVID affected as well. There are really logical reasons why someone who works as hard as Cooper and is so good around the club and someone we're really optimistic about hasn't cracked it for a game yet.
Bit of confusion about a couple of results at the MRO last night. I feel like we ask this question every time there's some eyebrows raised over a decision there. But as a coach, are you clear on what you should be instructing your players to be contesting the ball at?
Yeah, so the Mitch Robinson one, and I'm not going to... I'm going to avoid trying to give my opinion on what I think should happen. I'm going to speak more about what I understand the rules to be. And I think when it comes to the ground level ones, and it's really important to separate ground level contests from marking contests. I don't think that's widely enough understood. I would suggest that, I would politely suggest that more people go back and have a look at the Willy Rioli one in the context of the piece of play. Rao was running back with the flight of the ball, and the game doesn't afford you much protection when that's happening. If you make front-on contact to someone in a marking contest running back with the flight of the ball, you're the one that's liable. So what we instruct our players in the marking contest, if you're coming towards the ball or the ball's coming towards you, you have right of way and you can attack that ball as hard as you like. The hard part in the Rioli situation, and by definition, a marking contest is generally one where you jump off the ground. That's what we're encouraging players to do. The difficult part, in my opinion, was once he was in the air, having attacked the ball with his eyes on the ball, and it's hard to work out exactly what's going on around you. That's why we laud the players that keep their eyes on the ball with great courage, as Raoul did too. The challenge is, once you're in the air and you're slightly second to the ball, what do you do from there? And what we're advising our players is that you do have a duty of care, but sometimes contact's inevitable. You're running full pace at the ball, you have right of way, you're slightly late. How do you protect yourself? How do you protect the opposition player? We certainly don't encourage our players that you can just do whatever you want there. I think that one's extremely difficult and much more nuanced than most people give it credit for. The ones at ground level are a little bit separate. I think the game's changed. What the AFL are saying to us is that if you stop and hold, keep your feet especially, and almost look like you pull out of that contest to protect the opponent's head who's over the ball, then that's going to be okay. And I think the rest of the footy world's got to get on board with that. If we're going to ask players to do that, the days of saying this guy didn't go hard enough at the ground level ball are over, especially from a coaching perspective. Now, the only thing I'll say again is that is a split second decision. And again, we laud players who do go hard at the ball. And there is a technique thing there. Like, we don't encourage any of our players to go really hard at a ground level ball leading with their head. We think that's not the right thing for anyone to do. And it puts the other guy coming from the other angle who might use better technique to protect himself. And again, it's not a commentary on that specific situation. But yeah, we're saying stand up, be really careful in those situations. Is that your interpretation of it all more broadly? I haven't really followed the analysis of the decisions, but it seems to have been a little bit simplistic, and the little bit that I've seen in that, well, Rioli jumped off the ground and he turned his body. It's a marking contest, and the ball's coming to him. But sorry, Mitch, you were going to say?
No, I was just going to say, it's a fine line with one being a marking contest and two, where's his duty of care sit? So
there's the duty of care thing that everyone's kind of...
Yeah.
The Robinson one, I think I was saying that you might have had a bit more time to assess the situation, but you're saying you need to change approach anyway, just avoid those sorts of second decisions.
I think that sums up my position pretty well. The ground level one, we're asking a little bit more caution. There's no such thing as right of way on a ground level ball. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you hold back a little bit and stand up, we're not going to be coaching our players in the review on Monday saying you should have gone harder at that ball. I think that's where the game's changed. I remember the great Brisbane players I played with, they would attack that ball with everything they had, and anything that got in the way was fair game. Well, that's changed, and we've got to change with it. I think the marking contest one is much more nuanced. And again, if you look at a still photo, and the first time I saw the Rioli one, I thought it was a no-brainer, because I saw a still photo of him jumping off the ground, turning his body and hitting Rao in the head. It wasn't until I saw the piece of play where Rao was coming back with the flight of the ball in his own D50. I thought, wow, what a ripping player he is. That's why we laud him at this early stage of his career, because he put himself in a vulnerable position. But does that make it Willy Rioli's fault because he's coming so hard at a marking contest himself? I think it's a good discussion to have. And there hasn't been any instruction, I don't think, from the powers that be at the AFL, who have said, in a marking contest, now when you're approaching the ball, you need to think harder about what you do. But that might come, because no one, I don't know anyone in the footy world, the hardest footy heads in the industry, would even say, no, we've got to have this conversation, because when guys get hit in the head, if we can avoid it, we should. So maybe that change is coming, but I don't quite understand how some people could think the Rioli one was black and white. I thought it was really difficult.
On the ground ball stuff, you say you don't coach your players to put their head down if they can avoid it. Is that what you were saying?
No, if you can get your hands to the ball first, and that's the only way you can do it, that's the way we coach it. We'd prefer that they use their body to protect first, but that requires you to get to the ball a little bit earlier. So there are some times where you're reaching. If you're slightly second to the ball, you should be more careful. And the umpires, again, this is kind of, I didn't mean to spend so much time on my opinion on this. I don't want to be the spokesperson for it. But what I will say is I do think all this points to discouraging players to lose their feet. That these would not be as big an issue, in my opinion, or at least I think we should experiment with it. If all players were coached, you couldn't pick it up when you're on the ground. Then by its very nature, you'd approach the ball differently. You wouldn't be diving in head first.
Yeah.
But worthy of thought, maybe, but what do I know?
We don't need me continuing this, in my opinion, but I think that there needs to be a way to discourage players putting their heads in and putting their neck in danger like that. Do you think AFL can do that? Is that what you mean by going avoiding being on the...
I do, and I actually like the conversation. We're a little bit time limited here, but, you know, it's a... hard for the TV guys, I know you've got to get grabs here, but just like for context, I think in the marking contest, that was one of the drivers of the AFL saying... Nick Riewoldt going back with the flight of the ball and taking that mark. Jonathan Brown, way back, it was mark of the year. Do we actually want you doing that? I mean, when we played, you know, way back in the dark ages, that was encouraged. Go back with a flight, put your body on the line. And I think we've now said that's different. And we're actually the game's trying to legislate away from it, to the point where if you go back with a flight of the ball and you make any front-on contact, that's a free kick. So implicitly in the rules, they're saying, don't do it. Because one, you put yourself in harm's way, and two, you'll probably give away a free kick anyway. Now, we still, I think, deep down, we see Rao and you go, well, he just saw the ball and went for it. It's not a criticism of him. And I would suggest with the ground level one, that's kind of what we're doing as well. You get no protection at all if you run into someone with your head. You know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, that was a free kick. Now, if you duck your head into the contest, that's prior opportunity and you get pinged for holding the ball. So anything to discourage players from putting themselves in harm's way, I think, is a good thing. And the games, I won't say that bit. That's enough.